Barcelona. Castiglione flew back through the darkening night to Barcelona. It was nearly midnight when he finally arrived at Anita Halleck's villa in the hills on the outskirts of the city. She was in her study, a high-ceilinged room paneled with old-fashioned bookshelves filled with old-fashioned paper books that had never been opened. Halleck was sitting in a regal-looking armchair, a snifter of cognac in one beringed hand. As soon as Castiglione stepped into the room, she said, "I've just had a report from the head of the surveillance team. All the devices in their quarters went dead within seconds of their entering the rooms. Cameras, microphones, everything."
"Too bad," said Castiglione, heading for the bar built into the other side of the room. "It would have been interesting to watch that pretty little woman."
Frowning, Halleck went on. "They replaced the devices while she and Kell were with you at dinner, and as soon as the two of them got back from the officers' club, the devices went dead again."
Castiglione reached for a decanter of port. "She must be disabling them," he said.
"Obviously." Crossing the lush Persian carpet to sit in the wing chair facing Halleck, Castiglione shrugged nonchalantly.
"We suspected she had certain capabilities. Now she's proven it."
Frostily, Halleck demanded, "What other capabilities might she have?"
"Faster than light communications."
"Exactly. We have to get that from her."
Castiglione took a sip of port, then said, "Perhaps she'll tell us about it voluntarily."
"And if she refuses?"
He waggled his free hand in the air. "There are ways."
"Do you think they'd work on her? An alien?"
"They'd work on Kell. She loves him. She doesn't want to see him hurt."
Halleck stared at him for a few moments. Then, "I wonder."
"It would be interesting to find out," said Castiglione.
"Must your mind always be in the gutter, Rudy?"
He smiled thinly. "You never seemed to mind it before."
Her eyes narrowing, Halleck said, "Suppose we make a deal with Kell. We offer to build the starships he wants in return for her telling us how to build a faster-than-light communications system."
Castiglione's smile widened. "And once you have that knowledge, you don't have to go through with building the ships."
"We can run into unexpected difficulties with the program," Halleck agreed. "After all, building half a dozen starships is no small project."
"Kell would scream his head off to the news media. He'd make a powerful stink about your going back on your word."
"Not if he's safely contained. Someplace where he can't reach the media, or anyone else for that matter."
Castiglione pursed his lips momentarily, then said, "I don't think that airbase is tight enough to contain him."
"It's under a full security guard, isn't it?"
"Yes, but they're all Spanish Air Force people. I'd feel better if we had him stored away somewhere under our own security."
Halleck nodded slowly. "Somewhere off-Earth, perhaps?"
"Someplace where they'd be totally dependent on us, even for the air they breathe."
Once they were in bed together with all the lights out, Jordan asked Aditi, "Are you certain that all the cameras and microphones have been disabled?"
"Why? What do you have in mind?"
In the darkness, he could hear the impish tone in her voice. "Can you contact Audrey?" More soberly, Aditi replied,
"Oh, yes, of course."
"I think he can help us to get out of this prison."
"From 8 light-years away?"
"I think so." It took more than an hour, but at last Audrey's aged, seamed face appeared in the bedroom's three-dimensional viewer, casting a ghostly light through the room.
"Friend Jordan," Audrey said in his soft, whispery voice, "and Aditi, my dearest."
As usual, Audrey was wearing a floor-length robe. This time it was a pale yellow, embellished with twining traceries. He appeared to be standing in a moonlit garden. Jordan remembered that New Earth had no moon. The pale light must be coming from the dwarf star companion of Sirius, he realized. Knowing that a two-way conversation was impossible with a time lag of more than an hour, Jordan began, "Audrey, we need your help. The people controlling Earth's government are indifferent to the death wave. They feel a danger that's 2,000 years away isn't real. At least it's not close enough to rouse them to action. What's worse, they probably won't move to help the other intelligent species who are in danger from the death wave." On and on, Jordan spoke,
explaining in detail what he and Aditi had experienced since returning to Earth. His throat grew hoarse, and Aditi slipped out of bed to get him a glass of water.
"I'll wait for your reply," Jordan croaked.
"While I try to recover," he added silently. "I haven't spoken nonstop for this long since I tried to head off the war brewing between Kenya and South Africa ages ago." He sipped at the water while Aditi sat at the edge of the bed, watching him caringly.
"You've given Adri a lot to think about," she said.
Jordan smiled wanly. "I hope he can do what I'm asking him to do." At last, Adri's three-dimensional image spoke.
"Friend Jordan, your news troubles me. I confess that I expected better from your people. Please tell me how I can help you."
Jordan did precisely that.